Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Thank you so much for downloading and listening. Welcome back to new episodes. Hope you've been enjoying March Madness and all the great games, all the great social media content. Definitely a fun time. I am your host of the show, Neil Horowitz. You can find me on Twitter at NJH287. Hit me up on LinkedIn. Find more episodes and content at dsmsports.net and get the podcast on all your favorite podcast platforms. Great show for you guys today. Someone I've wanted to talk to you for a while, doing big things in the sports media industry. If you're listening to this podcast, there is a 99% chance you have read something that this company has produced. And we are joined today by Adam White. He is the founder and CEO of Front Office Sports. Very well known for their newsletter, for their content, original content, for their Twitter feed, for events now they're putting on. And we're going to hear all about how Front Office Sports came together and how it's executing and continuing to grow today in my really just inspirational and cool conversation with Adam. So stick around for that. But first, this episode's Post of the Week. And this episode's Post of the Week doesn't really look at an individual post, just a more general statement as we start off a new Major League Baseball season. Always cool to see teams roll out new graphics, new templates, new GIFs. Some you can tell really spend a lot of time preparing in the preseason, whether that's getting player shots and player reactions to prepare GIFs for the year. Others invest more in graphics. Others definitely use more of the highlights and GIFs that the league provides them that they get during games. But always just instructive to see who's stopping my thumb. Who's stopping your fans' thumbs? Who's doing something to stand out? Obviously, we can go for days about play-by-play during games. There's 162 games, so there's a lot of room for play-by-play because fans won't be watching all of them. But also, you don't want to become just a boring play-by-play feed. But the key when it comes to the visuals and where you're seeing a lot of teams nail it in college, in the NBA, and increasingly so in Major League Baseball as well, is just those visuals that pop. You know, it can be a template, it can be a one-off that just surprises your fans and delights them, highlights a milestone or a great play, but you know, really it's important to make sure that your content can stand out, especially in this day and age with Instagram being so visually important. Twitter, you know, some people are doing it by the top tweets, so getting that engagement definitely helps, and then certainly wanting to make sure that you are, you know, showing your fans something that they can be proud of and has a very nice, distinct visual brand to it that conjures a feeling every time it's seen. So, you know, not necessarily an individual post to look at, but take some time, take a look at what some of the Major League Baseball clubs are doing, take a look at what all your favorite teams are doing. You know, choose a couple teams every day, every week, take a look at their stuff and see what pops. And it'll help inform your own creative content and make sure that you're stopping thumbs too. So, that's episode's really commentary, I guess you could say. Now, stick around for a great conversation with Adam White, founder and CEO of Front Office Sports. Back from this episode's Post of the Week. Now, I am really psyched to be joined by our next guest, someone I've been aware of for a while. If you're listening to this podcast, you have almost certainly come across their newsletter, some articles, some video. We are joined today on the podcast by Adam White. He is the founder and CEO of Front Office Sports. Welcome to the podcast, Adam.
Yeah, of course, Neil. Thanks for having me. Excited to chat.
Really psyched to pick your brain. I mean, the amount of content that is coming out of Front Office Sports is mind-boggling. It's all high quality. You guys have your finger on the pulse of everything. And you built it up to be quite something and really a reputable brand in the space. So want to get to know a lot about what you've done. But first, tell us about yourself, how you got started. I know, you know, while you're at there at Miami not that long ago. Building up FOS, and any tips for folks that want to do what you do?
Tips if they want to do what I do. I don't know, just pretend to hopefully have no life for the next 4 or 5 years. So if you have kids or something else, or a family member or a girlfriend, or you want to have a 9-to-5, at least, you know, probably 4 or 5 days of the week, then don't do it. But do it is a whole different story. But no, for sure. So kind of the backstory, it all started at the University of Miami, like you mentioned early on. And it was really kind of born out of what was a class project at the time. So I had gone from the university, or I had gone to the University of Miami from Arizona, born and raised in Phoenix, wanted to get away and see a different side of the country, really force myself out of my comfort zone and not go to an ASU, U of A. Nothing against those places, but it was the fact that I felt that, you know, if I was to stay, I would just be around the same people in high school doing the same things like that. And so I really wanted to force myself to go away. My grandparents lived in South Florida-ish, you know, middle Florida. Tampa is really not South Florida, but they lived in the Tampa area. Mm-hmm. and I want to be closer to them, given that they just moved into a retirement home and a few other things. And so went there, had a good freshman year, you know, like many others, was studying sports administration. And as part of the whole curriculum at the beginning of the freshman year and throughout was, you know, some of the things that you had to do was experiential. And one of those experiential activities was doing an informational interview. Mm-hmm. And I said to myself, well, look, like if I'm going to do one informational interview, I might as well do more than one informational interview. And so I didn't really do anything at the time. After I did the informational interview, I believe it was with Blake James, maybe. I can't remember who my mm-hmm. first informational interview was with. But as anyone who works in sports or has gone to school and studies sports management, whether it's really true or not, I mean, a lot of it obviously is predicated on who you know, but like that's the big narrative at any type of educational institution. It's all about who you know. It's all about who you know. It's all about who you know. And so I went back home, was still playing baseball at the time, went back home to Arizona, was playing in a summer league that year after my freshman year, and I was just sitting around trying to apply to jobs. I'd served or I'd worked in the kitchen because we have a sports bar on campus at UM, and I was looking for a restaurant job and trying to find something to put some money in my pocket while I was playing baseball at night, and would hire a kid for 3 months. And so I was like, okay, that's fair, but I'm working out in the morning, I'm playing baseball at night, there's a whole afternoon in the summer of Arizona where you really can't go outside unless you want to die. and we didn't have a pool at the time. And so I was just like, all right, well, what can I do that's going to help me professionally and that is going to give me an opportunity to be able to make organic connections in the industry? And so I leaned back into the fact that I was like, okay, so if I did one informational interview, why can't I do multiple informational interviews? And then I kind of, you know, thought back and I was like, well, if I'm going to do informational interviews, I might as well give these people a reason to talk to me because, you know, with most people, especially higher level people, a lot of the times is the whole pick your brain type stuff. Right. I wouldn't say off-putting, but it's kind of like, you know, most people are like, oh, so the person's going to talk to me for 20 minutes. I'm never going to hear from them again. Blah, 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 blah. And so for most people, it's like, it's more of an ask, whereas I felt that I was coming in and telling them, hey, you know, yeah, talk to me, but let me tell your story, right? Like, and that's kind of what you figure out. And I mean, it's not a bad thing, but everyone likes to talk about themselves and everyone likes free PR for themselves. And especially at that time, right, I didn't think, you know, a lot of the publications, and I feel like there was fewer then than there are now in the space, were really like covering the people. And so I was like, okay, you know, maybe there's a way in here, and then maybe I, you know, can just do these personal interviews, put them up on a little blog, whatever, leverage it throughout my next 3.5-4 years, do it for fun, and then have it become something that allows me to walk into a job by the time I graduate. Because that was the end goal. It was to walk into a job by the time I graduated. But push comes to shove, I ended up doing 110 informational interviews the first year, publishing them all. And, you know, I brought on Russ after I got back to the University of Miami.
Did you just sit down with a tape recorder and then transcribe them all yourself?
So it's actually pretty funny to think about when I look back at the first one that I did. And what's really funny is that I remember vividly Robbie Shaw was the kid, and he worked at what was the sports quotient at the time. Mm-hmm. And he just hung in there with me, you know. It was a long interview. I swear I sat there for 2 hours, and I just asked him, like, machine gun questions where it was just, like, bullet after 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 bullet. After bullet. Wow. And, like, no flow, nothing like that. And then I realized after I was done, I was, like, sweating. You know, I was in my house, and I was sweating. Right? I was just so nervous. And then I realized after I was done, I was like, shit, well, for me to even keep this up, I was like, no way I can do a 2-hour interview because it took me 4 hours to transcribe. And I was just like, all right, this is crazy. And so I just kind of adjusted. And yeah, so that was the first one. And obviously things changed. I went back to school, as I was mentioning before we talked about that. And Russ, I literally put a note in our Facebook group, and I was like, hey, look, I'm doing this fun thing. If anyone wants to help me, you know, let's maybe do some social media, whatever, it'll just be a cool thing for us. And, you know, sure enough, Russ was the only person who ever responded. And obviously now, you know, Russ is the COO and my number two and arguably probably my best friend. And it's really interesting to kind of see how it's all evolved. But yeah, that's kind of the first year one story. It was just, again, a little platform that we thought was that was fun and that we would use to make it to the point where, you know, Russ had already got had a job, so it didn't matter for him. But for me, it was just like, all right, let's just use this and meet some cool people, tell their stories, and hopefully it'll get where we want it to get, and I'll get a job, and I'll, you know, leave it to the university and let the kids who, you know, who are at school work on it and carry it on, or I'll, you know, take it with me and maybe just do it on the side, something similar to what you're doing. So that was the initial, obviously, objections and initial, not objections, but objectives. Obviously, it's changed into a whole heck of a lot.
Yeah, so I guess first, kudos to you. I mean, it's really cool to hear the ambition behind that and how you just decided to do it. And it's obviously paid off in the long run. So what was the feedback like early on? Like, how did you know that these were hitting, were worth spending time on, and getting feedback from early readership? And then obviously, you know, what's that light bulb, that pivot point where you're like, I got something here and maybe I should hold off while I'm looking for a job and see where I can take this?
Yeah, I mean, there was no ever pivot point, quite frankly. Yeah, so early on, I mean, I don't know, I didn't really think about it, right? Like, it's funny, we do in a day now in terms of traffic what we did in 6 months when I first started this, right? Like, it's just funny to see how that is. It kind of puts things in perspective a little bit. But, it was never something that I was just like, oh, I wasn't measuring any success. The only success I was measuring was that I got to talk to cool people.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, when I started to feel like it was, I wouldn't say taking hold or starting to take off a little bit, was the fact that I was getting, you know, higher quality people, right? Instead of coordinators and interns, I was talking to managers and directors and VPs and all these other things. And so that was kind of my, like, tangible marker. And from there, it was just something that, again, I really enjoyed. It really comes down to just I really enjoy talking to people. It was kind of like my outlet outside of school and work and baseball and everything like that I was still doing while at UM. Mm-hmm. And it just really taught me a lot, right? Because the fact of the matter is, yeah, I was in school, but every day I was interviewing someone in the industry and had the opportunity to learn directly from them, right? So, yeah, I was getting my bachelor's degree, but I also felt like I was getting like a master's degree at the same time, because that's the best part about it, is you just get to talk to people and hear about their experiences and their thoughts and their perspectives and everything like that. And it really opens you up to a whole nother world, especially as a freshman, sophomore, junior in college, right? And as you got into being a senior. So, you know, I don't know what kind of happened, but I guess we just kept pressing the right buttons early on, right? Like, there was never a business plan, and we always laugh now because even today we're like still finding our, I wouldn't say finding our way, but still, like, you know, coming back from all those little like sticks you put in the ground to build like now foundations, because like the sticks were just supposed to hold you up till you graduated and then fall away, and then you know go on and build whatever is next. And so now we're taking those sticks and putting them together with, you know, duct tape and things like that, and then, you know, putting in pillars here and there and really starting to go where we want to go based off of where we've been at. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know if there was a real pivot point other than the fact I graduated in 2017. And at the time, I had started to interview with an organization in April of my senior year. Thought I had, like, was dead set on that job, thought I was going to get it. Ended up interviewing with them from April all the way till August. So I was just working on the site. Wow. I'd saved up a little money, but not a whole ton. And I was living off of that, and actually ended up living with my girlfriend at the time in an apartment that her parents were paying for. So, I mean, it was just like crazy at the time. And, you know, come to August after I got, you know, through the interview process and everything like that, and they flew me up and all this stuff, and then all of a sudden, after what would have been, you know, I think it was 12 rounds of interviews, and over what, from April to August, it's what, 4 months, I believe, they said, no, we're going to go in a different way. And I was like, well, shit. That's so insane. I graduated. I have no money in my savings account. I don't want to move back home because I would feel like a failure. I know I can serve and wait tables. I'm living currently with my girlfriend in Miami. I don't have anything. All my shit's in storage.
Yeah.
And at that time, you know, the site had taken off a little bit, right? Obviously, it's not where it would be at this point. But, it started to make us a few bucks here and there. And, we kind of saw the light, but it was, again, something that was all predicated on what I was going to do. And so I just told myself, I said, look, I'll find a way to make this happen for at least the next 6 months, because at that point it was August, right? And I was just like, well, get through the holidays, all these things, get back to the first of the year and see what happens. And so I started serving at a restaurant full time. Mm-hmm. So I'd serve there 5 days a week, actually 6 days a week. And then I would work on the site at night. Sometimes I would flip flop and do, the dinner service and then work on the site during the day. And as we came up to the ending part of 2017, we ended up signing a couple launch partners, right, is what we called them. And we sold a couple brands, Team Infographics and MKTG early on these launch partnerships that gave us a little extra money to actually have a real website and kind of actually pay our contributors, right? Because we're very early on, right? Everyone was working for free.
I want to stop because I want to hear about this. This is fun stuff.
Yeah. All right.
Were those first few bucks, was that just like your basic AdSense, go display ads, and then what kind of led you guys to have the conversation of, hey, let's go out and find some launch partners, and what's that process like of prospecting and negotiating and knowing what you're worth and all that?
Yeah, well, I don't think we knew what we were worth at the time based off of what we sold the assets that we sold for. we look back and laugh, quite frankly, but yeah, so. The very, very first check, and I still have it to this day, was a $2,000 check that I got from the University of Nebraska, who's been, a partner for us for the last 4 or 5 years, or for the last now 3 years. The very first one who believed in us, and it was a really cool, like I said, I still have that check somewhere. And it was just a cool opportunity. You're just like, wow, I built something that someone's paying to promote their master's program on, right? And so did that, and we're just like, okay, the traffic's there. I said, I think we can do these things. And then what we really focused on and what I had seen is, like, at that time, I believe it was the Axioses of the world who had just launched, and they were touting these launch partners that they had. And I'm like, shit, maybe we can do that on a smaller scale level. And so we just went out to four brands and said, hey, look, like, this is what we want to do. And this is what we want to be able to do, and I think we can do this. And we oversold the deals by so much, right? Like, I mean, the assets we gave these people is ridiculous, but we were able to parlay that money into being able to pay contributors and pay for a few things. And then at that time, I had started working for the university in the latter half of 2017 as like a TA. So I was there as a TA. So now I was working as a TA. I was working at the restaurant at night, and I was still doing the site during the day and when I could when I got home from the restaurant. And so it was a little bit hectic, but I started to pay my bills and I started to save up. I ended up getting my own apartment, moving out from my girlfriend and being able to have my own place, which was awesome. Just eventually was able to sign a few more deals. And in May of 2018, I went full-time, quote-unquote, which means we're just paying our bills. And then from there, I finished my job at the university after essentially what was a year there as a TA. And then, from May till December, it was kind of a whirlwind based off of really some of these factors. I had met our lead investor over Twitter in like March, and we just had conversations via the platform and nothing crazy. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, there was this opportunity and we jumped on a call, and I met him in New York when I was in June. And from June of 2018 till really November was the conversations about what we could do. And led to everything. I moved to New York in December of 2018, and here we are at the end of quarter one, still above water and doing better than we ever have.
You gotta be so many pinch me moments when you sign a deal, you get those launch partners, you get an investor. I mean, just really, really cool and really worth celebrating for sure. And tell me, I mean, at some point throughout this process, of course, we're glossing over it. And I want to hear a little about, you know, the development of the brand and what you guys, the space you're trying to fill and what you guys are trying to stand for when you go to a partner, when you portray yourself out there. I also do want to pick your brain a little bit about the editorial and the trends these days. But tell me about, you know, when it went from informational interviews to, you know, let's do stories on this, let's do stories on that.
Yeah.
Here's what front office.
I mean, again, I think all of the stuff that we've done has just been driven by the audience, right? People are just asking us, hey, you should cover this, or hey, you should cover this. Or we started getting pitches from PR people. Mm-hmm. Hey, you should do this, you should do that, you should do this, you should do that. And so it was just like kind of, again, all of this was a natural evolution. And then from a partner standpoint, I think early on, I think to this day we continue to execute it very well, is, you know, native branded content on site. I think for us, that's what we've been able to really, really do well. Obviously, that's parlayed into stuff like video and other things that we've been able to develop as our capabilities have expanded. But early on, that was something that we were doing that really no one else was doing in the space. And it was successful, right? Like, and so that was what we kind of leaned into, if we want to use a buzzword, and have been doing ever since. And it's definitely interesting to see how others have kind of migrated more towards that and seen what's, you know, how the trend is going towards what we believe is probably one of the more successful ways to, you know, B2B market. And so it was all just, again, a continued evolution from the brand perspective. I think there's a few things, right, from the brand perspective, without giving away too much secret sauce, but the biggest thing is we want to be relevant. We always want to be relevant. We want to be relevant and relatable. There's a big opportunity for what we believe and what we've created is a voice that doesn't necessarily talk down to people, but talks with people. We feel like you can trust us, you can read us almost as like I would be talking to you on this podcast, and we're a friend that you would be talking to the industry about. And having someone tell you about. So yeah. That was the voice original, and that's been the voice ever since. And I think, you know, it comes through on social, it comes through in the newsletter, it comes through in the written copy on site, it comes through in the events we have. And again, all of these events that we have and are going to continue to have were all predicated on people telling us, hey, we want you guys to have an event, and where we would ask for feedback about, like, what are you missing? And everyone would tell us, like, this is what we're missing, and this is what we want to see. And so we're just like, okay, let's go out and build that. And we went out and built Rising 25 because of the time. And obviously there's really nothing else outside of it. We're just like, okay, so you have, you know, 40 under 40, you have 30 under 30, but there's nothing recognizing these people who are hustling their ass off at 25 and, you know, below, just out of school, you know, really grinding and stuff like that. And we felt we had the opportunity. And so we added that to the mix. Well, now 3 years ago, this will be the third year coming up here in 2 weeks that we, you know, announced the class and everything like that. So, yeah, it's from an editorial, or excuse me, from a brand perspective, and from a just brand perspective on like the paying side, right? I think we had the opportunity to be extremely relevant and leverage that, and leverage social platforms like Twitter, especially to kind of build up what would be a vibrant social brand and something that people would think of more so, again, like a friend and not just like a publication. And after all, like, yeah, B2B publishing can be kind of boring, but especially in the sports industry, we don't feel like it has to be. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so that was really the two and kind of how we were able to transition to this point.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like the best kind of research and is to hear from your audience and know what they're looking for and what they want. And also, you're surrounded by a very much a dynamic world of publications. I mean, from, you know, every day you hear about something new, a plus or a subscription or, you know, layoffs or more or branded content and pivot to video. I mean, it's a very dynamic space, and I don't have to tell you twice. And do you guys look at what's going on elsewhere and looking at what a Bleacher Report's doing, what a BuzzFeed is doing, looking at, you know, hey, Digiday is starting to do a plus and then events, and or is it really, you know, more internal and there is more of a plan? It's not so much, you know, day to day, let's, you know, this might be something that we should explore.
I mean, yeah, it's quite frankly, like, it probably sounds canned, but like, for the most part, unless I'm really reading something for the newsletter or something like that, I'm not really focused on what other people are doing, because and we're all in different stages of our life cycle. We have 5 full-time employees now. Like, I can't do what a Digiday with 80 full-time employees and, you know, a profitable media company can do, right? Like, it's just not possible. And it's not even just that. It's like, Digiday's been around for 10-plus years, right? Like, we're in the first quarter of our first year as a real business with real full-time employees, right? So, like, we're 10 years behind just like a Digiday of the world, BuzzFeeds, all these other ones. So, when you think about it, it's like, holy shit, that's a lot. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of learnings to be taken away from all of these publishers, like a Digiday and like an Axios and, you know, some of these other publishers that I look to and I see as like inspiration for what we can be as we continue to mature and continue to have things developed out as, you know, as we grow through this first year after, you know, post-investment. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, just like anything else in the world, it's very hard. You get caught up, and I did at some point early on. I was caught up in the, like, oh, what's this person doing? What's that person doing? What's this person doing? What's that person doing? And you know, I kind of just came to the realization, look, like, there's so much real estate out there, and it's not like I'm competing with the Bleacher Reports and the ESPNs and the Scores and this and that, and, like, just the general sports coverage.
Yeah.
So I could just be me, and if we're us, like, we're going to be successful. Like, we don't want to be anyone else, right? Yeah, sure, I'll take ideas from other people, or, like, not even ideas, I'll see inspiration. I say, hey, look, like, maybe we can look at that and say, all right, what can we do to put our spin on it, or things like that. But for the most part, again, all of the stuff and the initiatives we've launched have been from internal discussions, have been from what the constituents want, and have been from where we see other media companies, you know, exceeding. Events, obviously, is, you know, something we believe that can become... It's just a good opportunity for us to have a physical interaction with people. You know, there's we're so digital all the time, right?
And
newsletter and this
too.
And that. Like, there's no real physical experience with the brand. And so how can we create that is the biggest factor of that. And it's not only just that, but, like, how can we create an opportunity for us to create more content? Obviously, is where the events come into play and are, you know, a really big driver. And we see Bleacher Report as a publication who is smart. And I even talked to Howard, their now CEO, wasn't the CEO at the time when I spoke with him, and he's like, yeah, we're going to go to the All-Star game, and we may have 4,000 people who come through our activation over the course of the few days. He's like, but I have 30 million social followers that want to see all this content. He's like, so yeah, it's great from an activation standpoint, it's great from all these other, like, physical standpoints, but from a content standpoint, it's like really where it's at because of the fact that, like, they can go and they have a presence and they're creating content for the 30 million social followers who have a bigger footprint than the 4,000 or 5,000 or whatever it may be that come through their activation at All-Star Week. So, I mean, again, there's so many learnings from different things. I think the biggest thing from us is that we haven't really, like, looked to other people in the space to take inspiration from. A lot of our stuff comes from outside the space in terms of what we can see has been successful or where we think we can do better, or, like, you know, if someone does this, maybe we're like, okay, maybe if we do this and tweak this a little bit, this will be work for us and our audience. But most of the stuff we've done have been inspired by is completely out of the space and, like, random places, honestly. It's all worked to this point. You know, we're still refining and tinkering a few things as one could expect, but, you know, I think we've carved out a really good niche and area for ourselves, and that one that I'm not going to say we can build a moat around, because that's not really the case with, you know, publishing nowadays, but can really build a, you know, a brand that people respect and is revered and that people want to open and read on a daily basis.
Yeah, I mean, outside of, you know, of a Digiday or a mobile marketer writing some sports articles here or there, and ESPN once in a while, or The Athletic, you guys, you know, not many publications do what you do, and you have some independent bloggers like myself who will write on it, but it's very much a vital resource for me and for the entire community, and it's cool to hear how it's grown and will continue to grow. And I do want to hear... I want to get into your editorial briefly here with a few more minutes left with Adam White before we get to this episode's terrible stat. But tell me about just one more thing on the business leadership side. And you, there's no manual for how to do this. You haven't been a CEO before. You were in college, and you know. And so, what I mean, do you have a mentor to help you a little bit? I mean, you're running a business and also doing the newsletter, and, you know, I'm really impressed. I love to hear kind of, you know, how do you learn that? Who kind of helps talk you through things as you make these big decisions?
Yeah, I mean, it's, I always joke, you know, like, you always look at titles and you're like, oh, you're just a fake CEO, you know, whatever it is. Not like in a bad way, but, you know, you just don't have what you think at the time is like CEO material. You know, I'm not Dara from Uber or Tim Cook or whatever it is, right? So, it's been good. I mean, I think it's definitely been a learning experience, right? I'm 24. I think the biggest thing is the managerial side, right? We had freelancers early on, and I've been in managerial roles and things like that where I've, you know, been able to oversee people at the bar, like when I was a captain in high school on the swim team, right? So I've had these experiences, but I don't think any of that stuff could have prepared me to what it's like to have to manage and take care of and think about having full-time employees, because that's a whole different ball,
no doubt.
A whole different ball game. And it's like been the biggest thing that I've struggled personally with the most is that, you know, how do you transition and start to let go of your baby and really empower the people that you hire to do their jobs, to do their job, because like you have to at some point, or it's just not going to grow, right? Right. Or you're just wasting their time and wasting your time at the same point. So it's, that's been the hardest thing. Obviously, mentors, I have a ton, Jason being one of them. I talk to him frequently, daily, if not more than that. You know, a lot of our other investors, Seth, and I've just been able to pick up what I think from all of the interviews that I've done, just really some of the, like, the things that I feel is are pertinent to be a leader in this space today. And, you know, I feel like when I was at Open Doors, I had a really good, you know, mentor or friend in Blake. And so to see how he kind of ran that organization, and from very early on when I was there, right, like this is two rounds of funding ago and like this very small office, and like they were still doing what they're doing, but it was very different to what it is now. And and it's been cool to see how that is. But I mean, it's like, it's just like anything else, right? You know, sometimes people are like, oh, nothing in college could have prepared me for the real world. But, you know, nothing I did as a quote unquote CEO prior to investment, prior to having full-time employees, I think really could have prepared me for what it's like to have and this whole first quarter, as we've tried to accelerate and do a lot of different things and have taken our bumps and bruises because we've tried to move too fast and other things like that. It's, is you learn so much, right? Like, you know, I feel like every day I get punched in the face and it's just like, oh, okay, so now I learn how to do that so I won't get punched in the face again, right? So, you know, hopefully by the time quarter two and three and four are around, like maybe it's one punch a week and not one punch a day. And so it's, I mean, you can't pay for this experience. You can't really like plan for this experience. It's just something that you get thrown into and you kind of have to figure out.
Yeah.
And then luckily, again, we've had amazing mentors, and even Russ, who's been around the startup and is a couple years older than me and has worked in the startup, you know, space for 2 or 3 years. I lean on him a lot too, right? Like he's someone that, again, I trust with everything that I have in my body, and it's been good to see him, you know, evolve as someone who can really help us from a sales standpoint and all these other things that, you know, the guy literally started out as Russ, the social media coordinator in my phone. And so it is funny to see.
Very cool. And tell me a little about the editorial. I mean, I think of FOS as my go-to. I mean, that newsletter, I know I don't miss anything because you guys catch it all somehow. And your Twitter feed is full of stuff, both native and sharing. So I'm sure a lot gets thrown to you these days, but what's that process like of making sure that you guys are on top of everything? And then beyond that, especially with the newsletter, how much are you looking to see where the traffic's going, who's clicking on what? So discovery, and then also kind of honing in on what you guys will focus on from an editorial perspective.
Yeah, I mean, from discovery, obviously it's a lot easier now because people are pitching us inbound. But the thing is, again, we don't, like, if we don't get to something during the day, I mean, like, we have 5 full-time people with 1 managing editor and a freelance, you know, reporter right now as we're hiring our staff, our first staff writer position, and hopefully hiring some more writing positions after that. But it's, you know, we stick to our guns. We know we can only do XYZ, and we know that XYZ we're going to do as best as we can because that's what we do best. And so we're going to cover the areas that we cover best because, like, we can only do that right now. We can't outkick our coverage because I can't go and spend 3 hours chasing this Nike story and, like, all this other stuff trying to figure out what's going on, because in the grand scheme of things, I'm not going to beat the Wall Street Journal. I'm not going to beat the New York Times. I'm not going to beat the Los Angeles Times, right? It's just not how it is. So our kind of play on everything is we usually like to take a step back from the breaking news. And if it's something that we feel like is going to be relevant in a couple of weeks, like, we'll write about it then with a completely different perspective and take. And so, like, again, our whole thing is, you know, everyone can tell the what, everyone can tell the what, but not everyone can tell the how and the why, right? Like, you know, it's like, if you tell the how and the why, it becomes a lot more valuable to the audience, especially when you're not asking for anything in return, right? So that's what we've leaned into, is the how and the why, right? I have, you know, 100 press releases a day come through my door, our editor's door, but we could, you know, put that on site all day, but it doesn't add value to anyone, right? Like, our biggest thing is if you can find something somewhere else, if you can find the same thing somewhere else, either we didn't do a good job or it's like a massive story that has to be covered, right? And so our big thing is everything on site is completely original to us. You're not going to find it anywhere else. And if that means we have to write 3 stories a day instead of 15 stories a day, I'll take that Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Because, again, in this era of the way media is and the way people consume things, like, you don't have to be everything for everyone. You just kind of have to be able to fill one thing for one person. And it goes back to very similar to what we see as like a kind of like a Goose Island mantra. Is like, we don't want to be like the only beer you drink. We want to be the best beer you drink, right? Mm-hmm. Same type of opportunity. Like, we know we're not going to be the only person you read, but we just want to be the best person to read.
Yeah.
And that's obviously still evolving, right? Like, that's not going to happen today or tomorrow, right? I think we're getting there day by day, but, you know, as we build out the editorial team, it's only going to become easier and it's only going to be able to become accelerated.
And as a reader myself too, I mean, I think the best stuff that you guys write about probably doesn't come from a PR pitch or an agency pitch. It's you know, finding something cool that a team is doing or, you know, a brand is doing in the sports space and probably maybe contacting them and getting the story and getting some analysis behind it. Is it really... You guys just see stuff, or you have market people that are marketing people, social media coordinators, digital coordinators, the teams who are sending you stuff, execs, or is it, you know, we found something, let's put one of our writers on it and have them contact X, Y, or Z team and talk about it?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. I mean, it's everything, right? Like, people are pitching us all day, and we're seeing things all day, right? Like, we're just slacking people, talking to people, X, Y, Z. So, yeah, I mean, it's just a mix of everything. It's something that, again, we're looking for stuff that may not be told other places. Again, that's interesting, that we feel like we have relationships, places that we can, you know, I wouldn't say, I'm not taking advantage of, but use to tell unique stories. And that's something we're looking to try and continue to build out is, you know, by the time we're done with this year, is to have a relationship with every team PR person. Because, again, we're so, so young. So to have a relationship with every team PR person, have a relationship with every league PR person, to be on their top of mind when it comes to sports business stories and pitches and things like that, even if it's not something we're going to cover, right? So I think, you know, early on out of the gates, we've done a good job at that. We just have to keep it up and continue to make sure we're doing what works best for us, right? Again, it all comes down to what you're going to do that works best for you. We can't do many of the things that everyone else can do because we're just so lean, but the areas that we find that we succeed in are the areas that we feel like no one else is doing quite like us. And so, again, focusing on our strengths and saying, look, like, these are the areas where we feel like we're strong, and, you know, just like working out, right? Like, you got to work out the other muscles, but the areas that you're strong, you're obviously going to, you know, lean to, right? Legs, chest, things like that, because, you know, you're stronger there than you may be in arms. So for us, it's like, how do we build our legs and our chest, and then how do we build out our arms from there? And if that all happens, you know, then we're going to be in a really good place.
You are appealing to the weightlifting side of me, so you're getting some points there for sure. And yeah, I'm sure I all the time, you probably, it never gets old for you to realize that they are CEOs and leaders in the sports space who look at Realm Sports as a, you know, a highly reputable publication, or you may look at your email list and see presidents and owners and high level execs. And I mean, my hat's off to you for what you built, and it was really cool to pick your brain a little more about it. I could go on for days with you. Maybe another day we will. But we'll have more fun with you in our Ask Adam segment coming up. But first, steps of the shareable stat. We'll be right back with that.
That was great. Really enjoyed talking to Adam. Really enjoyed learning about front office sports and, you know, how it's come together. And what a cool story. And what a, obviously, like I've been saying, and I can't say enough, what a great source of resources it is for the community to really keep up with what's going on, honor people who are doing some of the dirty work and being creative and innovative in the space. And we will hear a little more about Adam and front office sports in our Ask Adam segment, so stick around for that. But first, this episode's shareable stat. This little shareable stat is related to, well, March Madness. You know, around over a decade ago, I believe, George Mason became really the modern era's true Cinderella. They beat a bunch of big-name teams to advance all the way to the Final Four, little-known George Mason University. And there's a recent article that I read in The Athletic, a plug for The Athletic, about that experience, kind of an oral history of their experience of making that magical run to the Final Four. And one of the anecdotes really stuck with me that where the shareable stat comes from, and that was when their coach, Jim Larrañaga, talked to the head of merchandise, and the person that ran the campus store, and she was flabbergasted at how much they had sold. A typical week, she said, was around $11,000. The week after they'd clinched the Final Four spot, George Mason sold $876,000 worth of merchandise. So usually $11,000, that week $876,000. Make sure to get it exactly on, 876, because when you're previously making 11, every thousand matters. And talk about being ready to capitalize on the moment. And this was before, you know, social was really big, and e-commerce wasn't quite as common as it is today to be able to click on it, let alone click on a tweet, you know, swipe on an Instagram story to make a purchase right away online. This was really them being ready to capitalize on their moment, and, you know, whether that is having the inventory in place, having the marketing in place, making sure that things are, you know, set up to be able to capitalize on those sales. So what does that mean for you today as a sports marketer? Well, obviously, you know, you're seeing teams these days put out a tweet or a Facebook post that goes to their online store, their shop, and right after a big win. Hey, we made the Final Four, you know, get your t-shirt now. And that's pretty much par for the course, but what else can you do to make sure that you are truly maximizing your return? You know, maybe it means making sure that your mobile site is friendly, mobile friendly. Sending them to a landing page built just for that purpose, so you can, you know, make sure it's as easy and simple as possible and streamlined as possible, as few clicks as possible to go from clicking on the link to making that purchase. Utilizing some of the newer social platform features that allow you to do, you know, check out straight from the platform, or at least swipe up straight to buy, whether that's Instagram stories, even Snapchat, Twitter, Facebook, et cetera, making sure that when a fan goes through your process that you can test it yourself, go through the payment process, make sure that everything works, everything's not broken. Are there ads that you can start firing right away on Twitter, on Instagram, you know, even on Google for all the searches that you'll be getting? Can you capitalize on that with ads? Really, if you do it right, you're gonna be able to make some money no matter what. You know, you can tweet or post just about anything. It's gonna happen organically. Fans are gonna start searching for your stuff, wanting to buy that Final Four merch to show their pride. Make sure you have links properly tagged and all your analytics set up. But if you take the steps to really be thoughtful about it, strategic about it, and are ready for that moment, you can turn a good thing into a great thing, a great thing into a legendary thing. And that's where the shareable stat this week really underscores, with George Mason looking back on their magical Final Four run, when a typical week at their merchandise store, or the campus store for merch, totaled around $11,000. That week, $876,000. So that's the shareable stat. Think about it, ponder it, share it. And stick around for our Ask Adam segment as I talk more with Adam White of Front Office Sports.
Right back from this episode of Shareable Stat, and I'm joined once again by Adam White, founder and CEO of Front Office Sports. He probably posted a couple tweets or tweaked the newsletter during that short break, but he's back with us. And now, Adam, after your great interview, are you ready for our Ask Adam segment?
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
Let's go.
I was on The Price is Right, so.
Oh, no kidding. So did you make it up on the stage?
Yeah, I did. When I was 18, I went all the way to the Showcase Showdown and lost to a 93-year-old named Dolores.
Oh, man.
So,
oh,
yeah. It's a story for another day.
Tell me, what game did you play?
I played Most Expensive, and I won a sauna, flat screen TV, and Marc Jacobs accessories.
Holy crap. All right, well, we got a little bonus Ask Adam question. I'm glad you brought that anecdote. That's awesome. And Bob Barker or Drew Carey?
No, it was Drew Carey, yeah.
Okay, okay.
I grew up watching Bob Barker, but it was Drew Carey by the time
I made it. All right, into the list now. That was a great addition, though. Thank you, Adam. Come on down. Number one for you. The most memorable informational interview you did in your early days, when you were doing those 110 or so interviews, the one that really stuck out.
That's crazy. It's funny because I literally was just somewhere else where people asked me this, and I was just like, I don't know if I had the most memorable. I had a lot of good ones. You know, I think early on, Jeremy Darlow when he was still at Adidas, and it was like a really cool one that I thought Michael when he was still at Adidas. So those are like two of the early ones that I was just like, oh, that's cool. I sat down with Blake James too in person, and that was good. They were unique in their own way, and they were like positive in their own way. So it was definitely kind of fun to see. But yeah, that was for us and for me was the kind of the pinnacle very early on.
Is there one year. On your bucket list? Kind of one, someone out there that's your white whale that you'd love to get one of these days.
I'd love to get Shaq. I think Shaq would be really interesting. Yeah. I would love to get Kobe from a player standpoint. I would love to get Serena, too. I think Serena has some interesting feedback. Again, like there's so many athletes that I think would be really, really cool from like a league and team perspective. I really had a great time with Marianne, who's like the CMO for Pizza Hut.
Okay.
So actually, like getting deeper with her would be really, really cool. She's awesome. So would love to do that. Obviously, all the commissioners at one point, you know, would love to sit down with each one of the commissioners. I think would be really, really cool.
I think a lot of these can happen.
Professional standpoint, there's all of them.
You got plenty of time. I think a lot of these can happen. And heck, maybe get some free pizza for the front office sports office from Pizza.
Yeah, maybe.
Number two for you, Adam. Tell me whether it's by clicks or just by perception, the most popular article ever on Front Office Sports.
We wrote a jersey one that was all about, like, you know, the NFL and their rebrand of all the jerseys. Mm-hmm. And then that was, like, picked up on, like, 9 different Bleacher Report streams. I'm pretty sure the site went down at one point.
Wow.
So that was pretty popular. I would say that was probably the biggest one.
Very cool.
But yeah, that was a while ago, actually.
Well, then you got a bar to clear then. I'm not far away, I'm sure, from the next popular one. All right, number three. The most important lesson you've learned so far in your as an entrepreneur.
That's a good one. You know, I think a lot of it goes back to, and I always kind of lean on this from when I was with David Cohen, who was at the time the general counsel for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but we met and we went to a bagel place in Phoenix when I was living in Arizona, and he just happened to be in town, and like I drove out there and I met this guy, full suit, all this other stuff, and it was really, really funny. Him and I have stayed in touch ever since, but his like words of wisdom were really like, be a fountain and not a drain, right? So there's so many people, especially in this industry, that everything is just like ask all the time. And so instead of being a drain, like how can you be a fountain, right? And I think that's been one of the big things from just like a philosophical setting, is like how can we pour out all the things that we do that's going to be able to help people grow and like all these other things. So from a philosophical standpoint, I think that's really set well with me from just like a day in and day out standpoint, I think. You know, one of the other biggest lessons I've learned is just like a lot of whatever this is just pure perseverance, right? Like, I mean, again, we didn't reinvent the wheel and we didn't do anything, but like we just knocked on all the doors and we just kept knocking on all the doors and like we kept harassing people, like not harassing people, like harassing them, but like just not letting up in terms of like, you know, we knew we had this platform and we knew we could do this and we knew we were on top of them. I probably, you know, sent Jason's assistant like 20 emails after I spoke with Jason first off to, you know, to make sure that we got in a meeting when I was in New York. Right. Yeah. And again, it's just like the power of the follow-up is pretty important and pretty impactful, especially if you're doing it the right way. But like for us, it was just, you know, we just kept again, you know, knocking on the doors, and as we knocked on the doors, we were flexible, right? We all of a sudden tried to do something with video, and we're like, shit, like, this video can work. Let's do that. And, you know, Russ and I always joke our approval chain is like 2 minutes. Is this good? Can we potentially monetize it? Let's try it and see what happens. It's definitely like those would have been the few ones. It's just like the fountain out of drain, and then just true. I mean, it's just pure persistence when it comes down to it. And I mean, yeah, of course you have to be skilled and understand what your audience is doing and have, you know, other skills, but like sheer one versus one, a lot of times it's just like, are you going to do it day in and day out more so than someone else is going to do it? And it's not no knock against other people who don't want to do it, but like, it just comes down to the fact that like, it's almost like a race. Like eventually, like people slow down, and the people who don't slow down just keep going. So
inspiring, man. I love it. All right, we're gonna take you back to your college days, not that long ago, and I know you were probably in diapers the last time the football team was good. That's a swipe. Yeah. But tell me while you were there, as a student, your favorite Hurricanes memory, whether it was with football, baseball, basketball, as a fan, as a player, what's your Hurricanes memory?
Oh, man, there's so many. From like a student standpoint, like working as a manager at the sports bar on campus, like you can't beat that. From a sports standpoint, it was actually after I was a student, which I was so mad about. But like 2 years ago when they beat both Virginia Tech and Notre Dame at home in back-to-back weeks, and college game day was on campus.
The swag,
I mean,
was
dude,
back.
It was freaking I have never felt a stadium more loud than that stadium was when Trajan Bandy picked off the Notre Dame quarterback and took it back for a pick six, and we went up like 3 touchdowns. It was like, I mean, it was like literally shaking. It was ridiculous. And so that was really, really so much fun. We had such a good time, and I really, really enjoyed that. But yeah, that was probably the highlight from a pure just like sporting perspective. And then, you know, baseball, there's the milkshakes, and like they're known for that, so that was good. Basketball was pretty good in my first years, right? You know, made the tournament, and obviously they kind of trailed off a little bit in the last few years, but could beat Duke at home and things like that, and getting on camera and having Dickie V right there next to you. And it's just like these little things.
Hey, hopefully more good times ahead. I mean, you got a new era starting down there again, and Tate Martell somehow got eligibility, so it could be.
I'm not asking how. I'm going to go to the game and enjoy it.
We will not go down that path on this podcast, at least. All right, number 5 for you, Adam. Tell me the major sports event that you haven't attended that would be on your bucket list. What's that one sports event that you got to get to before you die?
Obviously, a Super Bowl. I haven't been to a Super Bowl yet. Mm-hmm. I mean, really haven't been to anything other than the College Football National Championship. So I was there 2 years ago, which was amazing. But haven't been to Stanley Cup Final, haven't been to NBA Finals, haven't been to a World Series, and haven't been to the Super Bowl. So those are the ones, like, domestically. I think abroad, obviously, Wimbledon would be dope.
Yeah,
I really want to get to Wimbledon. Any of the big major tennis circuit events I want to get to, Formula One in Monaco. Course, like all the just normal ones, I guess.
What is that one team or sport or athlete that you're most passionate about that you would say is your favorite?
I mean, born and raised in Arizona, huge Coyotes fan.
Go Yotes!
Yeah, I was a huge Coyotes fan. Season ticket holder for a while during the Gretzky era. I went to like literally every single game with my dad, so it was a lot of fun. But huge Coyotes fan. I actually have a Coyotes jersey sitting above me in my office right now. So
that's awesome. I definitely have a soft spot for the Coyotes. I haven't been there myself, and they're back on the rise. They're looking okay these days. They might squeak in the playoffs, and got some great
this
players.
Last road trip was extremely rough.
Yeah, it's very true. But hey, if they just get a few points now, we'll hopefully by the time this podcast comes out, they'll be back in a good spot. So we'll see.
I would really hope so. I really hope so.
All right. Number 6 for you, Adam. The sports tech or league that you would invest in today and why? I'm sure there's a lot of answers, but is there one or two or that you would say, okay, I'm going to put my money on these guys?
It's sports tech or league? Oh man.
You take it every direction you'd like to. If there's a business or a vertical.
Yeah. I mean, personally, I think anything that involves obviously sports betting is hot. I feel like I need a more fortuitous answer to this, but yeah, I don't spend a lot of time just thinking about that stuff, so I don't have a great answer for you off the top of my head, but
no worries.
You know, I feel like if there was one thing I would have to invest in, like from a organization standpoint, I think Topgolf would be it. Mm-hmm. I think Topgolf from a organizational standpoint, from an understanding of what makes consumers tick, from an opportunity once nationwide legalized betting is a thing eventually, right? Like they're building, and I know they have partnerships with people and they've mentioned that sports books and stuff may not be in their future, but it's like all signs point to something that could be potentially really, really huge on top of what they already have, right? Like, and so just to sit there and watch the operations and realize like how many people are there and what they're doing and the amount of people that are coming through there. And I don't know. I just think that they have nailed what it is to build like an experiential tech business,
yeah,
and have done it in a really, really good way and have a powerful brand behind it too. Like, you know, Topgolf, and you know they have like other competitors, but when you just think about the brand, like it's very similar to like Uber and Lyft, right? When you think about golf driving ranges, like all you think about is Topgolf, and a lot of people would, granted, they may use Lyft and they may use Uber, they'll still call them all Uber. It's just because of the brand, you know, the brand perspective and the brand identity that's been built. So
Topgolf,
I think if anything, it would be Topgolf.
Yeah, they're a great one. It'll be super interesting to see is how what it looks like in 5, 6, 7 years. What it looks like when gambling is a normal thing, and what maybe you're gonna just, you know, place a wager with your buddies, and it just happens through their app. It'll be really cool to see that space evolve in the near term and the long term. All right, next one for you, sir. I want to know, just looking at social media, the sports team or teams that do the best job on social and why.
I mean, I really like Duke basketball. They do a really good job. I think a lot of them do, like, again, it's just really hard to say, like, which ones do the best job because, I'm not internal with them, right? I don't know how many resources they have. I don't know, like, I can't say, like, a Clemson or a Duke is a trillion times better than someone else because of the fact, like, that someone else has two resources or something like that. Yeah, they may be better, but it's, like, not an equal comparison. So I think there's a lot of people who are out there doing it good. I think the best ones in general are like just telling really good stories with the access that they have. I think that's the biggest thing, is that the ones who are the best are leveraging the access to tell stories and deliver content that's quality, and maybe like staying away from, you know, play-by-play type stuff or things that just like don't move the needle in today's world.
Yeah, it's a good sentiment to have, and I think, you know, all the resources and people in the world, they can create some fire content, but at the heart of it all, it's telling good stories. It's having an engaged fan base, engaged audience, and if you're doing that, punching above your weight, you're doing a good job in the space. All right, time to embrace our inner fat kids. After a hard workout or after a long baseball game, what is the best meal to get if I'm down in Miami?
Oh, in Miami?
Where do I go?
Chicken vaca frita, probably with plantains, black beans, white rice. It's always a classic. That's the best, at least in my opinion, from there. Or like a Cuban sandwich. Always, you can never go wrong with a Cuban sandwich. What else? Yeah, I think that's really it. Cuban food for the win, always.
That sounds like a couple meals to me.
We went to this place too. I mean, there's this other place, but like it's a very Miami thing. It's called Hole in the Wall. It's a bar, but they had like the best dolphin sandwich. Obviously, dolphin's mahi, but like the best mahi sandwich I have ever had. And like that with like their fries, always spot on, always. So if you're down there, that would be it. It's either chicken vaca frita with sweet plantains, or you go and find a hole in the wall and get their mahi sandwich with their french fries.
Sounds like you got some good Miami cuisine down there, and that's That's what you gotta be known for. You gotta get some good fish. You gotta get some good Cuban food. You gotta love it.
Yep, 100%.
All right, number 9 for you, Adam. We already asked him, so let's skip to number 10 actually. The biggest sports story you're watching in 2019, and maybe we already talked about it, but what is blank? Fill in that blank for me. What's that biggest sports story you're watching for in the next 9 months we got left of the year?
8 months. I mean, I would just think it's more about how these platforms are positioning themselves for potential rights deals. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be like the biggest thing. You know, obviously the stuff that just happened with the NFL and DirecTV and NFL Sunday Ticket potentially not being an exclusive thing for DirecTV anymore, and who's going to get involved with that. I think that's the biggest story. I think, you know, another big one is just like how the teams and these leagues are able to find different types of monetization channels outside of tickets, just because of the fact like you're battling someone like an esports or something like that. Obviously, like, yeah, they have, you know, arenas now and things like that, but it's just like, how are these organizations going to find? And you're seeing someone like the Cubs doing it with their YouTube channel and their new RSN that they're building with they're building a new Marquee Sports Network. So, you know, I think that's going to be the most interesting thing just from a pure consumption standpoint. And I think there's so many other things, right? Like, how is sports betting going to change how people watch? And it's just all the normal stuff. But right, I think, right, you know, if you drill down a lot of it, it just comes down to how are these teams going to utilize and deliver their assets in a way that are going to be able to captivate the attention of an audience that is increasingly going to other places and finding ways to get what they want quicker and in a way that they can control. So, again, it's all about attention. How are you going to capture the attention of the people you want? And the people that are going to do that the best are the ones that are going to survive and who are going to be able to continue to thrive. So that's kind of the storylines.
I mean, so much has changed since, you know, since you and I were growing up, and I'm older than you. And, you know, when it was just going to a game, you catch the local team on TV, and that was about it. Newspapers, radio. And now there's so many ways to be a fan. There's so many different ways that teams can monetize fans. Live content is still seems to be king, and there's so many different content options out there. And that's why we love the space. That's why, you know, we'll continue to read Front Office Sports and learn from it, of course. And and hope that you and the staff will keep on churning out good stuff, which I know you will. So,
well,
time for you to take over the podcast before we go, Adam. And you get to shout out someone, your social media all-star to follow, someone typically on Twitter, it doesn't have to be, a blogger, whoever they are, and why they're worth following.
Oh, why they're worth following. Oof. Jason's going to get mad at me if I don't shout him out. No, I think there's a lot of different people that I like following. I like following people outside this space. I think, hold on, let me check really quick. There's a really interesting guy. I got to look at my Twitter. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. Jeff Morris Jr. is at JMJ on Twitter.
Okay.
He's director of product revenue for Tinder. And like,
wow,
I don't know. Everything he says is really, really interesting and has an interesting perspective from a tech and like just business background. And so I'm like super fascinated by what he has to say on social media. And it's always been, I think, at least in my opinion, someone that I really enjoy following.
I like that. Thank you for taking us outside the box a little bit. That would be a good one for us to pick up. And then how about yourself? Where can we find you as well as all things Front Office Sports on digital and social media?
Yeah, it's just FOS Adam on Twitter, Front Office Sport on Twitter, Instagram, and online. So FRNTOFFICESPORT, and then that's .com online. And yeah, it's just at on handle for Instagram and Twitter, and then we're just Front Office Sports on LinkedIn, which is where we've seen a lot of good growth too.
Awesome. And if you are listening to this and are not subscribed to the Front Office Sports newsletter, you're doing it wrong, so go ahead and do that. Adam, but we can't thank you enough for your time. What you do is an inspiration as an entrepreneur. What Front Office Sports does inspires our community and is a gift to us, so thank you so much for your time. Thank you for everything that you do at Front Office Sports, and best of luck as the brand and everything continues to grow.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
Totally. Next event, we'll see you in a Front Office Sports event, perhaps.
Yes, 100%.
Well, thanks so much again to Adam White, CEO and founder of Front Office Sports. I don't know if you could tell, he was still in the office at that point, late at night on the East Coast, just really grinding, practicing what he preaches, and for now the sport is really, you know, lucky to have him at the helm and really taking that in an exciting direction, him and Russ at the top there. And we can't thank Adam enough for his time, his knowledge, what he does for the industry, and really, really fun talking to Adam White today. But that'll do it for this episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Thank you for downloading and listening. I am your host, Neil Horwitz. Please ping me on LinkedIn or hit me up on Twitter, NJH287. Find more episodes and content at dsmsports.net. Lots of good stuff in the podcast archive if you're just catching on to the show now. Most of the episodes are pretty evergreen, pretty timeless, all things considered when you're talking about social and digital media. So thanks again for listening. We will be back in a couple weeks with a new episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast.